This is Tim Murdoch. You're watching Endgame Exotica, which is exclusive to White Rabbit Radio. It's the interview series. Today we have on a first-time guest, The Foundering, who is a very infamous, very large Twitter personality. Honored to have him on. He is a ragtime musician and extraordinaire. Very rare. Very rare to have your kind around these days.
For better or for worse.
Exactly. How have you been?
I've been great, man. Hey, it's I appreciate you having me on. I feel like the last time that we crossed paths, I was on the Christmas gathering. It was a big stream that we were all. Who was running
Hypocrite.
That? Was that
Hypocrite,
LP?
I think. Hypocrite.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it was. Yeah, it's Hypocrite. That's right. Anyway, yeah, man, it's great to see you. I feel like it's the season's changing. A lot of interesting things are in the air these days since I last saw you. And yeah, man, I like that you use the word infamous. I feel like I try to waffle back and forth between the fame and the infamy, but that's that tightrope walk that we are all delicately walking in the social media sphere in the 21st century, isn't it? So.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. But you know, you are a satirical songwriter. How long have you been in the, like, when did you get noticed by the dissident right, for lack of a better word? I know you're not in the mainstream conservative. I'm looking at your Gumroad and I'm looking at the song titles, and some of these look a little alt-rightish. Swindler's Grift, Ove Shut It Down. I mean, there's another version, Ove Shut It Down.
Yeah, those ones have gotten me probably in the biggest trouble.
Yeah,
those,
I bet.
Those two in particular probably would have gotten me banned from half the countries in Europe. Let's be real.
Definitely, definitely.
Well, so what you're seeing there is basically 30 years of my work. I mean, look at that, 2005. I've been writing songs for a long time, and then I had one of the earliest YouTube channels that was devoted to this sort of old school. You know, I don't need to turn this into a history lesson, but real brief, like this ragtime era. People hear that word and kind of they're just like, oh, it brings up the idea of this like coon songs and the old time, and it was offensive or whatnot. But it was a really like culturally vibrant time. It was that time, if you think about it, before shit really went south with the Federal Reserve, before World War I, before the Bolshevik Revolution, there was this kind of moment when the U.S. was pretty based. And it was, you know, I was after the Civil War, and the whole world was picking up on this energy that we were bringing to the table. And the music really reflects that time. So something drew me to the style. And a lot of these old ragtime songs, they're heavily satirical. They heavily challenge the status quo. They use catchy melodies, and then they put subversive lyrics to the catchy melodies. And the whole era kind of has been memory holed as essentially, you know, racist or whatever because of the words that they're used. But I found that it could be a really effective way. I mean, I guess I was trained a little bit with musicals. I grew up in California, so I was surrounded by the liberal thing, but I never really took to it. And I just was kind of doing my own thing. And then I went on the Alex Jones, not to give you my whole life story, but went on the Alex Jones rabbit hole and listened to Bill Cooper, Wim Cooper in the mid 2000s and started listening to all those podcasts and stuff. And then I started writing songs about this stuff. I started writing anti-war songs, anti-banker songs. And I noticed my YouTube channel was getting suppressed. And but back when that – before that was cool, right? I noticed like, wait a second. I'm just some like retard singing a piano fag, like singing on like whatever. Like what is – I shouldn't be a threat, right? But what it really was is that I was using these catchy tools and stuff again in a way that they had used to be used by the jesters, the court jesters of yore, right? They were the ones that were making fun of the king and the powers that be. And at a certain point, that was taken away from us. And social and with I would say big tech. They really put a stranglehold, and they created this world where any type of if you deviate from, especially in the entertainment world, which they have a monopoly on, they have for like 100 years, then they come for you. So I started writing these songs, getting a little bit of attention, and I did a few that were like Oy Vey, Shut It Down. The pandemic, the whole pandemic, quote unquote, really pushed me to, I was like, I'm done with this. I'm just going to go full crazy, because they went full crazy. So I started actually going pretty hard with some of the songs, got fired from like everything. Banned off of YouTube, and then banned off of Twitter after Elon bought it. And so I'm sort of been scraping my way back, and kind of using, honestly, if you're not getting banned, you're not, I mean, you, I know you because you've been at this for a long time, and you've been putting out this kind of edgy video content for a long time. So you've seen it happen in just like we've lived this. We were there when it was informing. We saw what the internet was before. And I feel like we are these remnants of this different time that was actually pretty awesome. And it brought us some of the best sort of minds that are the movers and shakers today, for better or for worse. So music is one of the tools that they use. It kind of wasn't my main thing. So now I'm using it against them. So there's my life story in a nutshell.
Are you classically trained at all, or you just kind of picked
this? Yes, sir. No, the ringer. Piano and violin from age 5. And I was in orchestras. I mean, my thing, I mean, I love Rachmaninoff, Grieg, Chopin, Tchaikovsky, all these great Western musicians of this Western musical tradition, which was taken and repurposed in America at the turn of the century with these ragtime styles that were all drawing from these European harmonies and going back to, you know, Beethoven and all those guys. Yeah, there's a whole legacy, the whole history there, and we've forgotten a lot of it. And some people are always, they kind of, they're like, why are you playing all this old timey stuff? And I'm like, it is, I get it, and it's not for everybody. But again, it's not, if you're not into it, it's not for you. I'm like doing this stuff because there's people that are not very receptive to when you're trying to say, oh, it's the Jews, or oh, it's the whatever. But then when you're kind of put it with this catchy little tune and with this with the shtick, the song and dance theater shtick, it can actually reach people that normally, I mean, not just lefties, but it'll reach people that are kind of asleep, and it'll make them think, which is why music has been so controlled and commandeered by these interests. It's become more like mind control than anything. So when I have these songs like You Will Never Be a Woman and all these songs on Fauci, I wrote songs about Fauci, and it really, it pisses some people off, but it also kind of makes, it brings people together. And that's what kind of the ragtime did, was that styles, it kind of, there was all this tension, but black and white people were like, they could find something in it they both enjoyed. And I feel like there's something in with music, and there's this place where both the left and right, not to make it too binary, but it kind of brings people together. And I know that we're kind of like, yeah, screw them, but we kind of need to welcome more people. And I feel like what I do is I try to do that. I try to welcome more people into the fold because some of my stuff is for normies, right? Some of the stuff that you're putting there is just like Jacques Brel, you know, famous French songwriter, very stuff that I would send to my grandma. But then I have stuff like, Fake and Gay and the stuff on just the Holocaust or whatever. And it's like complete opposite ends. So it's a little bit of a schizophrenic approach, but music is a fantastic tool, I feel like. And I think our side has neglected it and its power. And so, yeah.
Yeah. A Ragger's Lament.
Yes.
You know, Gayo, the Transurrection. I find that this type of thing can be disarming. It can help disarm people. It's part of a cultural, part of any type of, they call this a movement, I call it a struggle, but part of any of this, you have to have all sides represented, or you really don't have anything. So you have to have music, you have to have musicians. The challenge is for creative people. I found this over and over again over the years. In dealing with this, there's all kinds of creative people who would, in a normal white society, which we don't even have a society, you would probably be off either teaching college or, you know, you would be off in a totally another world. All of us would be. Malemployment is a topic. People are like employed in jobs that they're either unhappy with, or maybe they're happy with the money, but it's like, it's not what I would be doing in a white society. You know, we have all these distortions we're dealing with in our society. Have you noticed, obviously as a musician, you've had to have seen this firsthand?
Well, not only as a musician, but basically behind enemy lines here in very liberal California, where coastal California. I've seen that in a big way, and it's affected my life. I mean, it's why I'm on this trajectory now, in that I was I grew up very advanced with my abilities, right? And yet I was not really welcomed into, like, I didn't check any of the diversity quotas, right? Straight white male, you know, with white parents. And then, like, I kept looking around to see if, you know, I thought I was accomplishing stuff. And then I saw my peers who were less accomplished than me just pass me on again and again. And I didn't really realize what was happening at the time. And we're talking like the 90s, when affirmative action was just really bad. That's just when it just was starting to went nuts. And I didn't get any of the colleges I wanted, despite I was like composing symphony. And I'm not to make this a sob story, because I'm glad. But I mean, I would literally, you know, I was captain of the soccer team. I was composing symphonies and concertos. I was winning international music competitions, but I couldn't find a place. I wasn't welcomed anywhere. And I tried to do my own thing. And I saw this in my own life. And honestly, this sort of give and take, these are cycles that society goes through, as you say, quote unquote society, where they push you too far, right? And then we respond in kind. And I do feel like there's a type of kind of cultural renaissance that we are taking the reins of ever so slowly, that we are now pushing back, where, again, you're right, maybe there's another path where I was quote unquote successful and accepted when I was younger and making those decisions 20 years ago, and now I would be teaching in an institution, but then I would not be able to pursue these other thought experiments and these other passions that I have. And I probably would have been totally fucked during COVID, because I would never have wanted to participate during that. I mean, I lost all of my jobs, but I didn't really have, like, I wasn't like a professor or anything, but all my gigs, I was a church organist. I got fired from that, all my teaching jobs. And it keeps happening again. I keep getting doxxed, and they're finding these songs I've written, and it just happened to me again last year. So it's
welcome
a process.
Welcome to the party. Yeah. Well, at least you're getting gigs again, and you know, it's kind of interesting. So are you a music instructor part time?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I work a lot with musicals in general, choirs, things like that, with schools that need help with their productions or whatever. I toured with a pretty well-known band called Postmodern Jukebox before I started to go really hard. And I went around the world with them, and I was their musical director. So I do have that on my resume. And I work with productions, and mostly, yeah, I'm trying to, you know, I'm a dad. And so I'm trying to, like, keep the next generation interested in this stuff, and show that it doesn't have to be politically so one-sided, because there's this people just make assumptions if you're involved in the arts or in music, that you are going to think and act a certain way. And in my own experience, it is like, it breaks their brains. Like, with the I know I'm in a liberal area, but there are a lot of conservative types, or at least liberal disaffected types, where I am. And I had parents coming up to me and being like, kind of secretly, like, shh, don't tell anybody, but we like your videos. Shh, shh. So I'm like, all right, that's okay, cool. I won't bust you guys. But there are some that are, it's like the actual opposite. That they once they realize that I am not aligned with them, they absolutely went nuclear. So it's an interesting phenomenon to see. It's the NPC phenomenon, right? I don't align with them, therefore they have to destroy what they're not familiar with.
Yeah, I mean, when most people these days think of musicals, they don't really think of entertainment. They think of something political and gay, because that's kind of what Hollywood has done, and as well as New York, right? Broadway. It wasn't that way at the time period you're talking about. It was a totally different
if
deal.
You think, if you go back even to Shakespeare, and honestly, go back to Greek, Roman shit, because they were, those tragedies in their plays, they were like killing the king in them. And it was visceral. It was violent.
It was also very political.
It was very, and then you go to Shakespeare's time and he's got like the evil Shylock, right? Is the evil Jew that is taking all the money. And like, this was a way for people to express stereotypes. And when fast forward to, again, you know, the ragtime era, when you just putting up that coon song, right? The blackface, the minstrelsy. What it was it was kind of this give and take, and people have twisted it. You know, again, not to turn this into a history lesson, but people have twisted it. It's like, oh, it was just whites making fun of black people.
Yeah.
But it was actually not. It was everyone making fun of everybody. Blacks were making fun of whites. Whites were making fun of blacks. They were all making fun of each other, and it was kind of just a good time.
It wasn't political at all.
It was totally like post-racism almost. There was this kind of this collaborative, like, we respect each other's differences, and we know that we are not going to ever really get along, but we can at least laugh and joke about the human condition. And yeah, if you go back to Broadway, I know that's, again, a dirty word these days, right? But if you go back to, and I'm looking at some of these Broadway productions from the early 1900s, again, World War One, and the content is based and hilarious, and it completely it challenges the status quo. And again, there was something that happened within the last century that took away that tradition because it was so powerful and because it was such a uniting force. Because they want us all divided, right? And yeah, and they basically have had a monopoly on this world for 100 years. And I think that's silly. I mean, it should just be one of the tools that we have. Like, we don't need, like, again, I'm not saying that everyone has to enjoy campy ragtime shit tunes or whatever. But there is something about these catchy beats and rhythms, and you put your own type of whatever, you know, subversion into it. And it's a very effective tool, which I'm living proof. Like, honestly, they should have just let me have my YouTube channel, and I would have just shut up and kind of give, like, just rolled away and just moved on with my life. But the fact that then they had to be so, go so hard, and they removed everything, and they keep banning me, and I'm just like, okay, I'll just push harder, I guess. Like, thanks, right? So with every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And that's what, like, folks like you and I are like, we try to push back, like, every time they do that. And look, at I'm just like, I don't care. I'm going to sing coon songs, and I'm going to make, I don't care what people say, right? Like, it's going to be, I'm going to bring back this, not necessarily like go back to the old times, but bring back the idea that we can talk about and joke about these, like, racism. Look, I grew up with South Park. I grew up with these watching, you know, Monty Python, even things like that, that actually had real racial comedy, and they were, being offensive was okay. It was actually expected, right? And in my lifetime, in our lifetimes, we've seen it completely shift into the other direction, which is ridiculous.
Yeah. What is your best played tune? Is there one particular tune that stands out?
Well, a lot of people know Oy Vey, Shut It Down. That's probably my most,
let me do a search for it here.
It's probably my most notorious,
Foundering
Oy Vey. Yeah. Oy Vey. Yeah. Oy. It would be Oy, right? Yeah. Oy Vey.
Oy Vey,
Shut It Down. And I have a bunch of different versions, just generally the trans stuff. The first one there is good. The first one that comes up.
2024. Okay. It looks
like the one from just the, yeah.
Let's check it out.
Yeah. You always know when you get close to the viper's den, cause you can hear them scheming. Don't even jest, or the hornet's nest will descend upon you with a shock and awe. They fudge the scores, they fund the wars, it's how they do in Waterloo, who's the loser? It's protocol to hoax it all, like each pathogenic menace they design. Don't believe these lying eyes, there's no conspiracy comprised of lies and history's alibis. This timeline
isn't right. Oi, they shut it down, the goyim know too much. We rule the land with mighty hands that have the Midas touch. Call me Meshuggah for noticing a trend. There are certain things you cannot say, so sing them all instead. Hey, da 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 da. Go post online that being a Caucasian is fine. Prepare to be filleted alive completely. And if you try to claim that space is fake and gay, they'll greet you with obscene ring sounds. Careful, don't say that boys wearing skirts playing sports against your daughters is retarded. It's only a fad when every single ad depicts diversity in every home. Remember, we used to try to assemble and occupy, but they dangled us the trope of social justice. Woke sells quite well, it's also a spell, cause NPCs can't see beyond the veil. Don't believe these blind eyes, there's no conspiracy comprised of lies and history's alibis. This timeline isn't right. Oi, they shut it down, the goyim know too much. We rule the land with mighty hands that have the mightiest touch. Call me Meshuggah, noticing a trend. There are certain things you cannot say, so sing them all instead. Oi, hey, shut it down, you're showing now good luck. We are the Techno-Pharisees, you're just a bunch of schmucks. It's hard not to...
The Techno-Pharisees. Now, you're obviously seeing it from the Jewish perspective. You're making fun of them. You're seeing it like you're one of them. That's kind of the...
Exactly. That's
kind
right.
Of the gig. Like, okay, I'm going to shut it down. I'm a techno-Pharisee.
To convince when sizing up our lot. The next been stacked, so just relax here. Have a mazel tov. It's transitory, a funny story. Inflation just sustains the vicious vibe. An old Jekyll knew where they hide all their jewels, but they can't hide pride when it's a little on the nose. Who owns all this porn? It's kind of a warning. When the product's free, there's something else they're taking.
Who owns the porn?
Clowns in Hollywood drink their holly jolly juice, and the music industry's a masquerade. These parasites disturb your mind and turn you into something less than human. The hive mind queen infects your dream, cause ignorance is bliss and joy bliss. Don't believe these lying eyes, there's no conspiracy comprised of lies and history's alibis. This timeline isn't right. Oi, babe, shut it down, the going too much. With mighty hands and the mightiest touch. Call me Meshuggah for noticing the trend. There are certain things you cannot say, so sing them all instead. Oi, hey, shut it down, you're showing now good luck. We are the Techno-Pharisees, you're just a bunch of schmucks. It's hard not to convince with sizing up our lot. Let X spin stack, so just relax here, have a mazel tov. Oi, they shut it down, we're going not too much. We rule the land with mighty hands that have the mightiest touch. Call me a Meshuggah for noticing the trend. There's certain things you cannot say, so sing them all instead. Oi, they shut it down, you're showing now good luck. We are the Techno-Pharisees, you're just a bunch of schmucks. It's hard not to convince when sizing up our lots. The next spin stack, so just relax here, have a mazel tov. Oi, they shut it down, the goyim know too much. We rule the land with mighty hands that have the mightiest touch. And call me Meshuggah for noticing the trend. There are certain things you cannot say, so sing them all instead.
That's fantastic. I mean, how long did it take you to write this and to produce this? Because this stuff is deceptively technical that people look at like a ragtime type of musician like yourself, and it looks easy for someone that has no musical ability, but anyone that's like done any type of production or had any type of back end work done on music, this is highly technical shit that you're doing. How long did it take you to write this, to produce this and everything else?
My, like 35 years, right?
Right. Well,
No, no, but so I just was trying to like play off what you were saying, and that, yeah. It is really, really hard to play at like that, but then to just also perform and sing and look at the camera. And that's just separate from the whole writing of the song.
That's
so
tough.
This is kind of like one of my more notorious songs where I wrote it pretty quickly, but it was right when my stuff was really starting to blow up finally on like for the 4chans and stuff. 2021, at the height of the pandemic insanity, I wrote a song called You Will Never Be a Woman. And it started to blow up. This was before I was banned on YouTube. And it started to blow up on YouTube and on 4chan. And that You Will Never Be a Woman song. And then I was actually like, wow, people are actually listening to my songs. I've been shadow banned on YouTube for 15 years, right?
Wait a minute. Foundering Shut It Down, You Will Never Be a Woman.
That's from my album that was called Shut It Down that I made later.
Okay.
It's kind of just like it's a pretty tame song.
Okay. We're going to listen to it next, but okay. That's fine.
It's kind of like this lounge. It's not what you would expect, right? That it's like singing about you'll never be a woman. So it started blowing up on YouTube and then 4chan. And then all the comments were like, oh, this guy's probably another Jew, right?
He's trolling us.
Yes, he's being subversive, right? He's working from within. I was like, oh, that's hilarious. Because, I mean, it's you haven't made it unless you've been accused of that, right?
Right.
Right. So that, I was like, oh, finally, you're like, look, Ma. So then I was like, all right, I need to write a song then that will just shut them up forever so I don't have to deal with this anymore. So then I basically wrote that song in about a day or two.
Okay.
But the type of that is the inspiration for that is rare. And I've gotten good at writing these songs very quickly.
Yeah.
When the inspiration hits, but it takes a lot of my the creative process, right? For those that don't know, it can be draining, right?
Yeah.
I find like I go through cycles where I'm pumping out a lot of stuff and then I just need to recoup and then learn some Coon songs, right? Like just like chill for a little bit, which is kind of what I'm doing right now.
Do you write it on paper or do you sing it? Do you sit there at the keyboard and do you sit there at the piano and key it
out? So I usually will write down the words, but none of the music is written down for any of my songs. With a few exceptions, which I've done it like after the fact. But for the most part, I don't even write down the chords or anything.
Could you, or would that break the creative process if you had to write the chords?
No, mostly for the benefit of other people.
Right.
Right. If that would want to learn, I should do at least like chord charts and everything.
Yeah. But, well,
the process is tough.
Because when I was listening to Oy Vey Shut It Down, I always thought it was probably you're going to have a musical someday called Oy Vey Shut It Down. And that's kind of – it has a musical feel to it because there's a lot you could do with Jews and musicals.
Well, there's a whole thing there, right?
The musical.
One of the lines is there's certain things you cannot say, so sing them all instead.
Right.
Right? That's what it is. And I found that I can get at least to a certain point. I pushed – that line a little bit too far, but I feel like that is true. And that, the rappers that sing about shooting whatever, right? I'm killing niggers over here, right? It is, you can get away with that. And for some reason, they won't let satirists do satire of certain topics. Like that song has gotten me, has gotten me fired, right?
Oh, yeah.
Good job.
Well, it's going to get you fired. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not complaining. Like I knew what I was getting myself into, but at the same time, I can't call myself a satire musician or at least dabble in that stuff and then not hit on everything, right? I can't pick and choose. I have to make fun of everybody, right? Or otherwise I'm not like a real jester, the jester type persona, right? So I had to go hard on that, and I did. And I think it shows how effective – I did one for Rabbi Shmuley. You know Rabbi Shmuley, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I did a song for him that I'm proud of where I took – Fiddler on the Roof, right? Which is an old Jewish musical, right? If
what's
I want
a
rich man.
What's it called?
Da, 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 da. What's that?
What's the title of the song?
If I Were Rabbi Shmuley.
If I Were Rabbi.
If I Were Rabbi Shmuley. And I take these, for example, what we just listened to, the Oy Vey Shut It Down, it is a Jewish scale.
I can't find it.
If I Were Rabbi Shmuley. Shmuley. Springtime for Shlomo. I like that.
Shmuley.
If I'm a Rabbi Shmuley. I take their motifs, their tricks, their catchy tunes and riffs, and then I repackage them and use it against them. And I think it really pisses them off. Yeah, this one.
Well, they don't like satire. They don't like humor. You know, a lot of the humor they get hit with online, they can somewhat handle, except it's not just like Ben Garrison or something. It's not like a small number now hitting them a little bit, because it's very dangerous if you're out there, when you were out there making a lot of this stuff, because I don't know anyone else doing musicals like that at the time you're doing them. If you're like the only one or you're number one, they can really do damage simply because they have such an institution, and the institution can just say, okay, here's David Duke, let's go after him. And that's very easy to really, you know, mess with you. I mean, they can't throw you in jail or take you out, but they can definitely hurt you financially in this society. That counts. But right now, I feel there's so many different people piling onto them that's like, you know, it just depends on who they really want to target that particular day. Let me play this, because I haven't heard this one. Rabbi Shmuley, he's a very disturbing character, that's for sure.
If I were Rabbi Shmuley and diddle 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 diggle diggle diddle diddle bum, all day long I'd diddle little bums. If I were a Shmuley man, I'd peddle all my dildos.
You see, here's the thing. When you're singing this, when you're doing these satires about the Jews, you're really somewhat doing it in their kind of contorted style.
Yeah, it's the exaggerated, yeah. Facial, their whole shtick, and they have this smug self-satisfaction too, right? And then so I'm trying to channel that, because that's Shmuley's whole persona. Is he dresses up and he puts that nose on. He's like, haha, I'm a dirty Jew. I'm like, bro, you're ripe for satire. Like, thank you for just handing me that on a platter. So yeah,
it is funny.
Dreidel dildo selling dildos with my daughter and her mom. If I were a Jewish Shmuley man, I'd be digging with a dildo in my bum. I'd wear a grotesque nose and go grab some goyim right on the nipple with a pinch. A Shabbos lap dance breasts for the youngest mensch.
Yikes.
The books I'd sell would tell how all you fellas are jealous of Jewish sexual appeal. Meanwhile, I'd count the shekels that I'd steal. It's white supremacy when you are questioning me on the USS Liberty. Genocide's just fine when you're the chosen kind. I'd get a pass on calling Candace a nigger, a bigger gefilte fish to fry. I'd know why Michael Jackson had to die.
Uh-oh.
Why, if I were Rabbi Shmuley, diddle 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 diggle diggle diddle diddle dum. All day long I'd shalom in your home. If I were a Shmuley man, I'd go full kosher Kama Sutra. A dreidel dildo tunnel digging with a dildo in my bum.
Tunnel digging.
Lord, who made the Gentile and the Jew? Of course he'd make me superior to you. Gleefully I'd be squealing on our scheme to remove Christ the King from everything. If I were a Shmuley man.
That's funny stuff. It's good stuff.
Yeah, and you know, again, when you live in a fully satirical clown world and you're confronted by people like characters like Shmuley that are these larger than life abstractions, they're just total ridiculous whatever, clusterfucks of whatever, of clown world, clusterfucks of clown world. There's a song. I know sometimes it feels like these parodies write themselves. Like I just sat down and then I'm like, all right, this is easy. He's tunnel digging with dildos in his bum. But then at times it's like the overwhelming satirical nature of the world is hard even as a satirical artist. And I'm like, what's the point? If everything is satire, then am I even needed, right? It's just sort of this weird back and forth that I feel like the creative types even the content creators, we have to navigate this world where it's just like every day there's something totally retarded that happens. So,
yeah, you got a lot of stuff out there like that. Have you ever had any problems with other platforms besides?
Well, YouTube? Bandcamp banned me.
Okay, Bandcamp bans a lot of people on our side. Yeah, I found that over the years.
Bandcamp. I had some issues with Patreon. I wasn't so I'm on Subscribestar now. I wasn't banned on Patreon, but it's really just the YouTube, Instagram. They mess with me for years. This stuff, just the normal stuff. I mean, the YouTube ban was a big deal because I had 90% at least normie videos, just normie content. It was just, and it was historically kind of, not to like say what I was doing is like that important, but I'm keeping these old traditions that are important historically alive. And I had some of the first videos on YouTube that was doing of some of these songs, some of the only ones. And so they just, they 1,000 videos is just gone in like 15, 16 years of my life. And so it's hard. It hits hard when they come at you. And, but like I said, I'm coming back. Every time they do that, it makes me like, well, I guess I'm doing something right. So,
Few people know that Foundering is an actual genius. He has set records for Scrabble, speed solving, anagrams, and is also a rare book collector. Is that true or false?
who's that? Oh, yeah, Joseph. Hey, thanks, man. I don't know about the first part because there's some things in it that I'm just total retarded at, right? So, like, we all have selective intelligences, right? But the things that I have focused on, I've gotten pretty darn good at, right? With this piano, this type of piano performance where I just have the piano basically memorized and I can look and sing. It's not really done as much these days, at least playing at this level. I do have a lot, like I said, when I was starting to listen to Bill Cooper and all those guys back in the day, I started collecting really cool old books, Freemasonic books, and just stuff that had lots of juicy things in it, and spent a lot of money and time collecting that stuff. It's been a while since I've added too much to that collection, but I've made some videos kind of going through them and stuff. And yeah, I do play. I every day I
Oh, we have a Google Meet hang up. Let's see what we got here. You there? Let me see here. I'll tell him to just log out and log back in. At a shutdown. Shut down a little bit there, which is unfortunate. Let me get to some super chats. Hopefully he's okay. His computer might. Yeah, I know he's on a new system because we had to get around a security alert to get him on Google. Mossad shut him down. The Mossad. Let's see here. Foundering's book collection. It looks like it's quite a collection too. Let's go to some super chats here. Hopefully he's okay. His computer might have shut down. It's possible. Very much possible. Okay, hold on here. Let's see what we got here. Let me put it up here until we get him back on, or I don't know. I guess the show, it'll be a fast show. I have to have him back on again if we're having that many computer problems. Let's see, Aaron White, thank you very much. A Pebble in the Pond, Oy Vey was my introduction to the foundering. I had to listen to it multiple times to make sure I heard it right. Yeah. Okay, let me get back to you guys here. Let's see here. Hopefully he realizes his computer might have quit, but that's okay. We'll stay up here for a few minutes and see if I can get him back on. Let's see here. Let me cruise around and look at a couple things. Hopefully he's okay. But he was on a new computer and we were having challenges earlier. Oh, that's quite a call. Okay. All right. It's quite a long video here. He hasn't got back to me yet, so I wonder if his whole entire computer froze, which is okay. All right, play another tune? Well, we can definitely do that. Let's play Shut It Down. Okay. Let's go down to this right here. Let me get it up here. See if he jumps back on here or if he's capable of it, hopefully. Let's see here. Hopefully he gets his computer's okay. You know, it just depends. Let's see what we got here.
In the ancient Greek tragedies, the women were all played by a man.
Uh-oh.
I guess that ain't hard to understand. It was a different time in a distant land. But nowadays, it's one big gay parade, and no one seems to bat an eye when kids can pick if they're a gal or a guy. You will never be a woman, because a woman has a womb, not a man. You will never be a woman, but that's a tough stand. You will never be a woman. Try as you...
His computer crashed. He'll be back in a few. I just told him take his time. I'm playing a tune.
Might you look like Cher, not Snow White? And while they take our rights away, you're up at night deciding if you're queer, bi, or gay. Or maybe, hey, go seize the day and throw those balls away. You will never be a woman. Don't be mad, you're a lad. You're Adam, not madam. Is it that bad being a guy? I don't mean to be rude, but you're still a dude. Whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa, 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 whoa. You will never be a...
Okay, let me hold on here. Let me get him in here. Let's see here. Are you there? There you are. Are you back?
Oh, is it all messed up now?
No, you're all right.
Okay.
You should be fine. You should be fine, yeah.
Perspective is all wonky now. I can't see myself. It's all right. Who cares? Oh, my gosh. Yo, that was weird. I got like a weird type of death screen on my computer that I've never seen before. Like never happened before.
I'm telling you that they're on to you, man. They're on
you. They're
busy. Testing out the new technology on you.
Jeez, man. I was expecting JFK files today, and then instead I'm getting these cyber attacks, bro. What are you doing here? Anyway, sorry about that.
I
made sure that I don't have anything else running, so
it's
I honestly don't know what happened.
It's a live show, so it is. So we're just playing Shut It Down. Shut It Down.
The You'll Never Be a Woman one.
Have you ever done any type of live show for like right wing audiences, like put on an hour show of your music or a half an hour show or anything?
Love that. I performed in this kind of cool smallish festival last summer called the Patriot Jam, and there's going to be another one this summer. But honestly, I feel like I don't want it to be like a sob story, but I don't know if what I'm doing is fully quite understood and embraced by the broader, whatever the community is that we are a part of. Not that like it's, in other words, I'm more reaching out with this stuff to the other side, right? To show them that these are things that are not, you don't have to be a crazy person to kind of like joke about trans people, right? Like it is, there's certain things that you can do and that you can address in song. So no, I would like to do more type of events. And I feel like we are experiencing a type of revival And that there's a revival in this interest in the understanding that that composers like Wagner and shit, they used to be based, like the artists were actually the ones that were the conspiracy theorists and were the crazy, the ones that were pushing the envelope and really challenging people, right? So I feel like we are now seeing a time when that type of creative types are being accepted. And so I think I would imagine the next few years I will start to do that. I'd love to. It'd be a lot of fun. I've already toured the world kind of for normies. It'd be fun to do the same, but for like interesting people.
Well, a lot of this is becoming mainstream, so music, it definitely helps.
You will never be a man.
This type of
your
thing
hips
is mainstream.
Don't lie because you weren't born a guy. You can never be a man. If even Wikipedia tells me you're still Ellen and not hell yet, you'll never be a man. Give it a rest, get that fur off your chest. The feminine is magical. Don't change it cause they told you that it's fashionable. You'd have to be fanatical to throw your boobs away. Huh. You will never be a man. You're Eve, you're not Steve. Please call the woke police. Does that make you feel more like a man? You can call me a pig and a prick, but you're still a chick.
The harmony.
The world needs more men acting like men. You will never be a woman. We need fathers and fighters to lead us and guide us. You'll never be a woman. No one's impressed with your take off that dress. The masculine is powerful, but they tell us that it's toxic and intolerable. They want us meek and malleable, so no one stands in their way. It's okay, you're not a woman. It's great you're a mate, and it's well you're a gal, and it's lovely being alive. For the surface doesn't show what's deep inside. We were all born perfect souls. There's no need to hide.
There you go. You'll never be a woman. And you had one that just came out for this isn't even a day old. It's from yesterday, right? It's from St. Paddy's Day, correct?
Yes, that's right. Yep, I recorded this yesterday.
Now, was there some type of controversy with this on X? Because I see your post while Grok actually gets it, or did you just make sense by asking Grok?
So, this is a new project that I'm doing right now, in that I'm trying to record a lot of these old songs. There was a period of about 50 years, so not a small length of time, when so-called coon songs were the most popular style of music in America. Most people don't have absolutely no idea, or they'll hear that and they'll be like, what are you talking about? But it is really a fascinating time. I mean, I'm just going, again, we don't need to make this a history lesson, but you asked about the song and the Grok. And so it really is this, again, cultural moment that we had where comedy, everything was allowed, and songs could talk about and express whatever that people were feeling, and everyone sort of laughed and had a good time with it. Long story short, that entire era of music, half a century America's first contribution to music in general were these coon songs that came from this. There's a lot of it came from the Irish jig tradition, came from the European dances and stuff, but then they infused it with the plantation kind of melodies. And the word coon actually was a term, slang term for white people in the 1800s, in the early 1800s. A coon was someone who wore a coonskin hat, and they were rustic redneck types. So the term coon, even though it's today they think, oh, it's a black thing, a racial term, it was actually not. It was just a term for country bumpkins. It was like, oh yeah, a coon, right? So a lot of these old songs, they're singing about coons and everything, right? So, but over the years, it sort of developed into this new form, right? And it changed its name to ragtime, essentially. And then from there, it turned into what we now know as swing and jazz and rock and pop. All of that came. America was this powerhouse, not just because of our economy we were this rising new thing, right? In the turn of the century, right? 1900. We also affected the world culturally, right? So you can have an economic powerhouse like China, but they're not infecting the world with their catchy tunes and their movies for 100 years. They're consuming our shit. We are the cultural movers and shakers, the Western world mostly, but America had this moment where we took over, and, you know, obviously it went in a bad direction once Hollywood became degenerate and all that. But there was this time when we were the center where all the great creative types gravitated towards, and it was during this era, and the music reflects that in a big way. And what's so interesting is I found that, and it's not because I'm like white or anything, but I always just assumed that all these old ragtime and all this stuff came from black culture exclusively. And I found that is almost entirely the opposite that I've done. Even Wikipedia is lying, because there's this narrative, this kind of We Was Kangs narrative. And to be fair, some of my biggest inspirations musically were black musicians. Fats Waller, Art Tatum, Scott Joplin, some of these guys. But I'm now seeing that white people kind of did all of this first, and it was black people sort of parodied us, and then we parodied them parodying us, and then they parodied us back. And that's how this whole minstrelsy and the blackface, that kind of came from this. And we think of this as, oh, it's just this horrible racist and everyone was, you know, lynching everybody. It wasn't like that at all. It was like, and again, not just trying to say that, oh, we need to just assimilate everything. There was something about the era that was like, we acknowledge our differences.
Well, they're segregated. The black. If you're segregated, there's all kinds of special rules in place to deal with race once you're segregated.
Exactly.
This and is what you guys do over there, and this is what we do, and these are our points of meaning because we whites run the country, but, you know, we're not being dicks to you and stuff like that. Yeah, the whole idea of lynching was very rare, unless you're like black and like an urban area right now, lynching is pretty common, but that's, you know, lynching.
If anything, and this is going to sound maybe weird, but some of these coon songs that were almost all written by white people, like this song right here is written by Irish guy. It was almost like they were acknowledging the culture, the black people culture, and being like, yeah, we respect what you do. This is what we do. But we going to keep that separate, but then we can both find enjoyment in these styles that embrace each other's cultures, but also like lambaste it, like totally mock it, totally. But in a way that it was funny, and it wasn't mean spirited. So long story short, I'm going through these old songs. A lot of universities, the Library of Congress has a lot of them copyrighted. If you think about before there was recording.
Oh, these are still copyrighted. That's bullshit, isn't it?
No. When they initially were copyrighted, they were put into the Library of Congress. They are, all those copyright rights are gone now. But the what I'm trying to say is, before recorded music, the only way that you had music was sheet music, right? So all of the energy went into producing sheet music. And then you had to get your sheet music copyrighted. Otherwise, someone might steal your... And there's cases that I've discovered now of two guys that are like, they wrote the same... Or one stole his melody and one copyrighted earlier and they go to court and everything. So this, that for example, Bedelia, this Coons, the Irish Coon song, it sold 3 million copies of sheet music, physical
Holy
copies.
Cow.
Which is a huge, huge number. This is a massive industry. And partly... Everybody could play piano. Everyone knew
piano
how to play
lessons,
piano.
Piano lessons were very common when I was a kid. They're not so common anymore.
Well, 100 years ago, it was just like, this is how you – and then so all these advertisements would say, try this song on your piano, right? Try this on your piano. So it was like, oh, I can take this home and instead of put it in your record player, they didn't have them, you put it on your piano and that's how you experience these songs. So when the record shit showed up and that kind of it created new opportunities, but it killed this era of this kind of genuine songwriting era. And it became way more easily controlled, right? Sure. The sheet music companies had a lot of control over things, but the record industry really took a, went in a bad direction. Right. And same with Hollywood. There was this moment in, you take a look at these based movies that in the silent movie era. I know people will often bring up Birth of a Nation and stuff. They'll say, oh, it's racist today because it portrays the Ku Klux Klan in a positive light and all this stuff. But there was
anyone would be worried about black crime or keeping
Woodrow Wilson, the president, even though he was a dick, he was showing Birth of the Nation in the White House, which was just celebrating the KKK. So this was a time when again, it was a pre-racial, post-racial kind of, I mean, it wasn't perfect, but there was these places that everyone had in life and we all acknowledged those differences. And the way that we miscegenated was not physically, it was artistically. And the thing about artistic miscegenation, which is kind of what ragtime is, a piece of Europe, a piece of Ireland, and a piece of the South, piece of black culture, it's got them all there. The thing about artistic miscegenation is you can separate the parts, but once you actually bring the races together by physical reproduction, you can't then separate. But with ragtime, I can still pull the classical part away from it. With art, you can pull and change and everything. And that's what those impulses that we have to share between cultures can be done in a more responsible way in the artistic realm, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that you can acknowledge the differences, but say, here is how we're going to communicate with each other. It's through music and these themes that we all can kind of, we can all get along. And
well, blacks have been doing that since day one. I mean, where would they be without white musical instruments?
100%. And I mean, so if you go to Wikipedia, these other fake history things, or if you take a ragtime course, it will say ragtime was first by black culture, black. And it's just the opposite. The first ragtime song published was actually by a white Irish dude with red hair who lived in Tennessee named Ben Harney. And he was the real father of ragtime and was known as the founder of ragtime. And it was all white folks. I just got a book called Lost Chords, and it's a it's a history of the lost influence of jazz being white phenomenon, right? People say, oh, jazz is the black thing. The first jazz band, the original Dixieland Jazz Band was their name, were all white dudes. Some were Italian guys that had come over, right? So this is all Western musical tradition. And America, you know, we're known for jazz and all that stuff. Well, this actually, it came, I'm not going to downplay some of the plantation aspect, the elements in the, because blues kind of came later and was separate, and blues is its own thing that I'm not as much into, because it's more about like feeling sorry for yourself and stuff. And as opposed to the ragtime, which is more taking action and being more just aggressive with everything, right? And the blues was the more black thing. And the ragtime was a more white thing, and not to make it all black and white. But there is something about this era that really, I mean, maybe I'm an old soul, but it draws me to it. So I'm going back and I'm recording all these old songs. I recorded Ben Harney, who wrote the first rag that Wikipedia refuses. Wikipedia's so funny. They admit that he wrote it a year before this other black guy whose first real rag, I'm not even making this up, his first... Wikipedia is so desperate to deny the white heritage of jazz and all that, that they say that the first guy who wrote the song is called "All Coons Look Alike to Me" is the name of the song. Huh. And it's a banger. It's a good song, but it was written by a black guy. So Wikipedia really wants to say that he was the first guy to write rags, and he wasn't. There were white folks that were doing it long before, and it was through a lot of these coon songs, which turned into ragtime. So the precursor to ragtime was, and I love that we're getting to the sort of, I'm really in the weeds of this right now. So as I was saying, I've been collecting these from the Library of Congress, the New York Public Library. They have these all scanned, but they're all forgotten. Nobody plays them. And when the record recordings became popular, possible,
do you have the sheet music? Do you actually have the real music?
So I just download the digital copy. I have over 1,000 of these coon songs now, all digital. There, I do have friends, nerdy friends that in the ragtime world that are musicians themselves or just collectors, and they do collect these on eBay, but mostly just to own them, and none of them are singing or playing any of these songs. Partly because they'll get canceled forever, right? But what is so interesting is I find that most of these aren't even really, quote, racist. Like this song, Bedelia, is not racist at all, even though it's called a coon song. But because of that word and everything has changed, it's like, I mean, all these songs, it's like nigger this, nigger that, right? But it was never really meant. I mean, some of them are like, they're pretty funny. Like, oh, that nigger's eating watermelon and cutting people with razors. And like, that's like the song. Like, but for the most part, they're quite lovely, and they really have this, I don't know what to describe, this sense of transporting you to the past, but also the future, when this shit was okay to sing about all these funny things.
Right.
So I'm the whole thing with the grok, I know we went on that's a little diatribe here, but I'm anticipating pushback. Because I'm going to continue to do these songs, and I've started with some of the more tame ones, and I'm going to do ones like All Coons Look Alike to Me that are not going to be as well received. But fortunately, I'm very shadow banned in general, so like my band off of YouTube, the people on X that are my biggest following right now, whatever. So for the most part, they're going to love what I do. But once like Black Twitter finds out that some white dude is singing All Coons Look Alike to Me, it's not going to go over very easy for me, even though I've already been through the ringer.
Well, let's Let's play this one, and you can give us the lineup.
This one is quite lovely and it's not offensive at all.
It's not going to be politically controversial like some of the ones you are working on now, is what you're saying.
Exactly. That's right.
All right. Well, we like the political controversy ones too, so I'll have to play those as well when they come out, but let's play this. Got the old sheet music up. Oh, I've heard this chorus before.
There's a charming Irish lady with a roguish winning way, who has left me heart a bumping and a jumping night and day. She's a flower from Killarney with a Tipperary smile. She's the best that ever came from Erin's Isle. And I find myself a-singing all the while. Bedelia, I want to steal ya. Bedelia, I love you so. I'll be a chancy old cot if you'll be my Molly O. Say something sweet, Bedelia. Your voice I like to hear. Oh, Bedelia, Elia, Elia, I've made up my mind to steal ya, steal ya, steal. Bedelia, dear. If you love me, Bedelia, half as much as I love you, there is nothing in this world can ever cut our love in two. For I give you army money on the day that we are wed. I will cook for you and even bake the bread. And I'll even bring you breakfast up to bed. Be Dahlia, I want to steal ya. Be Dahlia, I love you so. I'll be a chancy old card if you'll be my Molly O. Say something sweet, Dahlia.
Now, who's a chancy Alcott? Is that some kind of expression or saying at the time?
Yeah, he was a famous Irish singer and songwriter who wrote My Wild Irish Rose.
Oh, okay.
And a bunch of really old classic Irish songs. So he was like a, you know, attractive,
famous.
Right? A songwriter, right? And all these cultural references are so fun because everybody knew who Chauncey Alcott. I mean, I didn't know until I sung the song.
Right.
I had to look him up, right?
That
but
must
it's
be someone,
again this era
must be a big
that everyone
deal.
Knew what that was, right?
All right, let me continue playing this.
Your voice I like to hear. Oh, but Dahlia, 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 I've made up my mind to steal you, steal you, steal you. But Dahlia, dear. Oh, but Dahlia, 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 I made up my mind to steal you, steal you, steal you. But Dahlia, dear, but Dahlia, I want to steal ya. But Dahlia, I love you so. I'll be a chancy old cart if you'll be my Molly O.
Now, who's Molly O?
Say something.
Molly O is another female famous singer at the time period.
You know, I think she is just an archetype of the beautiful, perfect Irish woman. That a lot of songs would sing about Molly O, and she may be a historical figure, but I don't think so. I think she's just more of an idea.
Sweet Dahlia, your voice I like to hear. Oh, but Dahlia, 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 I've made up me mind to steal you, steal you, steal you. But Dahlia, steal you, but Dahlia, steal you, but Dahlia, dear.
Fascinating.
So I appreciate you taking – I mean, this kind of stuff – I get some people that are into my satire, and they're
Owens
like, what?
Over – they're hold just on. Like if reviews on Israel.
Advertising or something.
And then as
in.
We reported –
hold on here. Got advertising hitting me. Okay, go on.
Oh, great. Anyway, as I was just saying that people are kind of like, why are you doing this stuff, you know, deviating a bit from the satire? And so I appreciate you taking the time to listen to this old tunes. And again – there's something about them that really draws me, and I'm just beginning to scratch the surface of what they are. And for example, a song like that, it's called a coon song, and automatically people would never want to play that or even, you know, listen to it. But I'm trying to show, in fact, that by picking a song like that on for St. Patrick's Day, to show that these are quality, that song, it sold 3 million copies, right? And these songs were well, you know, people know Hello My Baby, right?
So yeah, this is a big one.
Yeah, Hello My Baby, Hello, like the frog, right? These songs, and even look at the imagery on that sheet music. It's all the blackface. There's all these stereotypes. They're
well,
all black watermelon.
Blackfaces weren't stereotypes. Blackface was part of a comedy. It wasn't just comedy. It was part of a...
It was an aesthetic. It was, yeah. It was an aesthetic.
It definitely was an aesthetic.
Thing, and it was not just a mockery type thing. Some of it was even weirdly deferential. I know that sounds weird. So with these tunes like Dahlia, no one has recorded that in 100 years, man. Like, there's something weird about that, but also exciting. Like when I did this song Dora Dean, this song hasn't been recorded maybe once in the last century.
What is Dora Dean about? What is this about here?
That's another very tame one. It is just about his love for Dora Dean. And what's so funny is I discovered, like I mentioned, a copyright situation where people would steal from each other's. So there was Dora Dean was by a black writer, composer. And then this other guy wrote a song called My Angeline. And it's the same freaking song, like exactly the same. Everything's the same, except he basically changed the words a little bit. And I'm pulling up right now. Dora Dean ended up being not allowed. He determined that that Dora Dean came first, the judge did. And Ma Angeline, I should say, he denied the copyright because Dora Dean had the word hottest in it, which was considered to be offensive at the time. So he was not allowed to say Dora Dean was the hottest gal you've ever seen. So he had to rewrite it and republish the song as Dora Dean, the sweetest gal you've ever seen. And what's hilarious about that is that the Ma Angeline song, let me just read to you. It's basically just like nigger this, coons this, niggers stabbing each other, niggers this. And the judge was like, oh yeah, that's totally fine. Right. So it was what was deemed offensive at the time wasn't all the niggers and doing all the whatever. It was the hottest, right? You couldn't say a hottest, right? Just to go to show that these things were not considered to be offensive or racist even. It was just – it just was what these songs were. I haven't done Ma Angeline yet. That one's going to be funny when I do. Like, so that's why I said. I'm easing people into the coon song genre, and I picked some of the more tame ones. The song La Pama La – which I did a video of before Dora Dean, is the chorus is all like nigga this, nigga that. But again, it's all just for fun. But some of these songs are freaking hilarious. I mean, the titles would just, I just pull up my thing here. Let's see. A song called Nigger on the Brain from 1864. Mama's Little Alligator Bait. what is another one? I mean, Paris is a paradise for coons. Let me see here. The Sheeny Coon. Oh my God. Brush by, nigger. Brush by. Every race has a flag but the coon. An educated coon is the best of all. That gay old nigger ball. And again, some of these are They're actually just really fun, jaunty songs. And again, haven't been ever recorded or sung in over 100 years. So I feel like I'm gonna single-handedly bring back the coon song tradition for better or for worse. Now that I feel like I did a lot of the satire stuff and I'm like, all right, I need to shift course a little bit. And to America's turning 250 next year. So it's historically appropriate.
Let me play these next two. If you guys like the show, support the show. Thank you very much, Rebel Science. Salute. I appreciate it, man. Over there on Entropy.
Way down in Louisiana, that's where old Sister Hannah bakes the crackling bread upon the coals with her daughter Dora Dean, who is my dearest queen. Oh, I tell you, boy, she is a lump of gold. She goes to church on Sunday, you'll find her home on Monday, helping all the folks the house to clean. Their home, it looks so neat, you'll find it hard to beat the way it's kept by Dora Dean. Oh, have you ever seen my Dora Dean? She is the sweetest gal you ever seen. I'm gonna make this gal sweet Dora queen. Next Sunday morn, I'm gonna marry sweet Dora Dean. While
down with Sister Holly. We all did feel so jolly. Each one tried to cut a pigeon wing. Went up to jump Storadina, who said, I am the queen. I can beat you in a dance for anything. That just suited old Aunt Dinah, who sang a tune in minor, thinking that she could the music make. So we started into test to see who was the best. And Dora walked off with the cake. Oh, have you ever seen my Dora Dean? She is the sweetest gal you ever seen. I'm gonna make this gal sweet Dora Queen. Next Sunday morning I'm gonna marry sweet Dora Dean. My Dora Jean, she is the sweetest gal you ever seen. I'm gonna make this gal sweet Dora Queen. Next Sunday morning, I'm gonna marry sweet Dora.
It's kind of less like classic, simple ragtime music.
It really is. And if you think about this, the words are like he's praising her for her traditional values. She's a homesteader. She helps. Seriously, she goes to church. She's back home on my, like,
that's pretty common
about
back
how
then.
Done,
yeah, you
how
might as well.
The music industry has been totally perverted to extol the opposite vice instead of virtue, where he's singing about Dora Dean. She's so sweet. And you're not even allowed to call her the hottest gal. A judge was like, nah, you can't do that. Right? It was a different thing. And again, this music, it was pre-degeneracy. It was pre-degeneracy, but it was post-racial in that it was everyone was making fun of everybody. And that song was Dora Dean was actually a famous cakewalking dancer. And what cakewalks were was cakewalks were kind of synonymous with coon songs. A cakewalk was a dance that black people came up with to make fun of the whites on the plantations that were doing their frou-frou European style dances that were very prim and proper. And so the black people were like, yeah, we can do it. We're going to do a dance like that. And we'll call it a cakewalk. And they would win a prize for the best dancer and they would win a cake. And this was a whole thing. I mean, when I was a kid, we would used to do cakewalks. Well, it came from this, it was like a parody. And then white people were like, we actually think that's kind of funny that you're making fun of us. So white people started to parody the cakewalks and writing their own coon songs. And then the black folks, like the guy who wrote Dora Dean was a black guy. He was a blackface performer, even though he was yaller. And that's another thing. I'm learning all these slang from the old times. They used to have all these words and a lot of them were racial. I couldn't even find it on Urban Dictionary, the word yaller. A lot of these songs are, oh, he was a yaller coon. Y-A-L-L-E-R. You see it in almost every song. And it's basically a yellow, like a lighter skinned black person. They would just call him yaller. But it was often used affectionately. It's like, oh, you're my yaller coon, right? So Dora Dean Ryder was a yaller coon. And he would put on blackface to make himself even darker, right? So he was kind of like they embraced this back and forth, right? It was black and whites parodying each other's cultures essentially, and it created a whole new musical tradition, which is what all of pop music today stems from, this moment in time. And instead of being fully explored and by historians and musicians today, they just kind of, it's like write it off, where it's like, yeah, black people made up this style and then it became jazz one day and that's what America did. I'm like, nah, it's not what happened. I've only kind of found this really in the last couple of years. I've started to do a real deep dive, and then this new project of learning these old songs is also is recent. And so like this song Hello My Baby, they used the word coon one time in the song, but that's enough to basically make it you can't sing it anymore. And a lot of these, again, the sheet music are hilarious on some of these. The stereotypes are so over the top that I kind of like, yeah, I guess I can see why musicians don't want to play it. But then if you actually play the song, it's a really nice song, a lovely song. And so these we have such a skewed perception of these stereotypes and words and how these words are inherently bad and must be removed. I know when I was getting cut off, when I got cut off from whatever, my computer died, I was talking about, someone asked about my Scrabble stuff. So I study words kind of for almost like as a side job where I actually make money competing daily online with word game type things. Usually they're, it's not necessarily Scrabble, it's like Boggle and Anagram type challenges. But so one of the things that I do is I study these words and I learn which words they're canceling words, right? So Scrabble officially removed nigger, but then they removed 300 or 400 more. They removed goy for being offensive, which is hilarious. So you can't use goy or goyim in Scrabble anymore. And the list of words that they said are now offensive and can't be used in Scrabble are insane and ridiculous. And it just goes to show how important language is. Language is a spelling, and that they have essentially weaponized it against us. And part of it comes from redefining words so that we begin to question our own sanities, our own realities. It's like, yeah, okay, a pandemic actually means this now. You know, a vaccine actually means this now. And they do this on purpose just to fuck with us. And it comes back to haunt them in that they basically banned the word coon and they banned the word nigger. And I can now look through all these old archives of the Library of Congress. All I need to do is look up, search for the word coon. And because they have memory hold that whole everything, I can now find billions of things just by searching for that. It's just, it opens up this whole world, right? So it's just interesting how they try to use words and language against us. And that is up, and it's up to the lyricists, the songwriters, the poets or whatever, the content creators making videos to then take that back, take that agency back that they've tried to have a monopoly on the music industry. They try to say, oh, you can only, there's only one, Elton John, there's only one Beatles every 100 years. There's only one Mozart. There's only one Shakespeare. When in fact, anybody, if you work hard and you kind of, you have a proper training and the upbringing doesn't hurt that, you know, my parents put me in piano. I mean, sure, they didn't expect me to take the satire route, but they pay for these piano lessons for 15 years for me. And I'm now using these tools that have traditionally been white Western European composer, the Beethovens, the Bachs, the Mozarts, the Wagners, the Rachmaninoffs. These are all white European visionaries that framed culture, and they really brought us the best of it. And now they don't want to let people like that have power anymore. So they try to say, oh yeah, it's only these woke motherfuckers that are able to create anything, art in general. And it was never meant that way. So yeah, I'm taking these songs like Hello My Baby. People know that from the Frog cartoon and whatever. And I'm showing that, yeah, it's actually a racial thing. It was, look at that. Look at the people that wrote it. They're a husband and wife. They're just white as fuck. They're like from Kentucky or something. And they're writing songs about black people, but they're doing it in a way that was like fun. And it again, there was a separate world, but it was something that everyone could sort of get along with. So I'm trying to bring that stuff back and show that you can sing words like coon. And I'm not going full blackface yet, but we'll
on there. We'll see what happened. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You froze up somehow, some way. So let me see if I can.
I got quite a look on my face.
Yeah, you do. You froze up on me for some reason. But you're not froze on Google Meet. You're froze on my screen. Hold on here. Let me see if I can.
Is it there fixed
we go.
Now?
Yeah, it's unfixed. There you go.
Okay. Yeah.
It happens. These things happen. Technical. Let me play Hello My Baby, then we're going to go to some modern politics stuff for the last half hour. Because you put some interesting stuff on your X account.
You're playing the clean version because I took out the word coon on this one. Not that it matters. Hello,
I've got a little baby. Well, let's. I mean, which is okay? This it must be this one then. This must be the coon one.
got a little baby, but she's out of sight. I talked to her across the telephone. I've never seen my honey, but she's mine, alright. So take my tip and leave this gal alone. Every single morning you will hear me yell, "Hey Central, fix me up along the line." He connects me with my honey, then I rings the bell. And this is what I say to baby mine. Hello my baby, hello my honey, hello my ragtime gal. Send me a kiss by wire. Baby, my heart's on fire. If you refuse me, honey, you'll lose me. Then you'll be left alone. Oh, baby, telephone and tell me I's your own. Hello, hello, hello there. This morning through the phone, she said her name was Bess. And now I kinda know where I am at. I'm satisfied because I've got my babe's address here pasted in the lining of my hat. I am mighty scared, cause if the wires get crossed, 'twill separate me from my baby mine. Then some other coon will win her and my game is lost. And so each day I shout along the line. Hello my baby, hello my honey, hello my ragtime gal. Send me a kiss by wire. Oh, baby, my heart's on fire. If you refuse me, honey, you'll lose me. Then you'll be left alone. Oh, baby, telephone and tell me I's your own. Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime gal. Send me a kiss by wire. Oh, baby, my heart's on fire. If you refuse me, honey, you'll lose me. Then you'll be left alone. Oh, baby, telephone and tell me I's your own. Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime gal. Send me a kiss by wire. Baby, my heart's on fire. If you refuse me, honey, you'll lose me. Then you'll be left alone. Baby, telephone and tell me I's your own. Telephone and tell me I's your own.
Well, I think you're going to have maybe a very robust career remaking these tunes. I see this becoming big.
It's a lot of fun. And I, you know, I'm trying to, like I did the clean version, right? And I'm not trying to deny the history, but for example, the Dora Dean, someone messaged me and they were like, my six-year-old has asked to listen to the Dora Dean song 20 times. And I love that. I love that. And I don't, just because it has some of these words in it, I do want to offer an option for some of these songs for parents that might want to let their kids listen to Hello My Baby and not have the N-word or the coon in it or whatever. There are some of them, like All Coons Look Alike to Me, which are probably not going to be possible to do that with. But I might change that to something more modern. I've been trying to write my own parodies of these songs. So instead of that, I was going to do all Troons Look Alike to Me. So there's lots of possibilities that you can do with these old tunes. And I feel like I've opened up this can of worms, as it were. And it's a Pandora's musical box, really. And people are going to be really surprised. Like I said, I started out with some of these more tame songs to sort of ease people into it. And then I'm going to start doing some of the more spicy ones. And like I said, I think people are going to be surprised, even compared to some of my spicy content, my actual spicy songs. This is going to be, it's going to be interesting. But I do think there is, I don't know about a career, but certainly this will be a big part of my legacy, whatever that might be, as a musician, will be trying to breathe life into this forgotten, neglected, and important time in history before things really got messed up by all the usual suspects. So we can segue into the modern stuff too now. And hey, looks like I'm just seeing now JFK files are released. I'm ready for it to be a whole lot of nothing. But who knows? I could be pleasantly surprised. So we'll see.
Yeah, I we're going to go to X here in a second. I was just going to mention that it seems like I mean, I've been building my X account over the – I've had a pretty large one for a long period of time. These days it's not considered that large compared to others, so I'm trying to build it up. And I found a strategy of posting various different things. And so this is the first time since I've been posting a lot, the last month and a half, right, the last 6 weeks, that I got a – I don't know if it's a strike today or they limited the visibility of this post and they wouldn't allow me to appeal it. This is a Disney cartoon.
Disney songs banned on X.
Oh wow, okay. All right. That's what I was going to ask. Is it seems like it's the Jewish question, because this is Three Little Pigs Disney cartoon 1932 and this is 1948 post World War II, where it's a wolf that goes from being a merchant to a wolf. Look at the merchant.
Yeah, I could do a whole 2 hours on my experiences on X, because it's been very interesting, because I basically put I moved over to Twitter after my YouTube ban, and I was banned on Twitter by Elon's Twitter and then brought back on October 7th. Yeah, that October 7th, after half a year being gone. And then I was immediately doxxed and fired for anti-Semitism right in the aftermath of October 7th. And I'm wondering who the fuck at X unbanned me and why. Why didn't they even tell me why they banned me? So then I had Oy Vey Shut It Down was removed from X. And then I wrote a song just a couple months ago, and it was actually about Indians. It was called Barry and the Jeets. It was a play on Benny and the Jets.
Yeah, I remember that. I played that at the time, Barry and the Jeets.
Yes, Barry and the Jeets, yeah. Because that was all big because Barry Stinson got banned off of Twitter or X or whatever. And so I was like, oh, that's a pro. I'm going to write a song. It was like it practically wrote itself. I mean, Benny and the Jets, Barry and the Jeets, right? But Twitter, X.
Is it up on Rumble, Barry and the
Jets? It's
Jeets.
On Rumble, yeah. Twitter banned it. It went uber viral, and I've been at this for 20 years.
The name of it? What is the name of it?
Barry and the Jeets.
Is it Barry
B-A-R-R-Y. Yeah, yeah. It had like 2 million views, yeah. But like plays on not just views, like plays.
This thing was big.
It was big, but then they killed it. They killed it, and then they suspended me on X for a week.
This was good one. This is one of your best.
Sheep, rivers, curry roads, they flow forever. They're sleeping with their cows. See how they crowd your towns. They'll make you hear their septic bowels, solid walls of brown. Say, Sanjay and Haji, have you dissed them yet? Yo, roast a poo in a tweet. Or like Barry and the Jeets. To Gandhi and Bindi's and Bollywood, I'm Barry, he's really mean. Call them dirty poo, just an action to ooh. They say they'll rape him in his van sheet. Poo, 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 Barry and the Jeets.
This is a good one.
Hey, Sheba, why did you pee into the Ganges? You gave him dysentery while Barry makes them angry. They'll call Kali and Kumar for a helping hand.
We're gonna move on, but you gotta keep them coming. Gotta keep them coming.
Yeah, sure. It's a hard work to do these, you know. And it's not. I try to make it look easy, but it takes a lot out, you know. And I put a lot of pressure on myself, which is kind of nice. I'm taking this other. I'm doing these ragtime stuff, but it's fun. It is. It's hard though. At a certain point, you kind of, like I said, the world is satirical. I'm like, do I really need to write a satire song about this? Because it's already so stupid. But it really works. And honestly, it proved that is still effective. If it wasn't effective, then why did that song blow up? And then why did I get suspended? And why did it get banned? Right?
Yeah. If something has millions of views, these Jeets are very. They have this like collective organization now running around trying to ban people. On yeah. Telegram, stuff like that. But let's go over in the last so many minutes. Let's talk about the JFK files, because this is rather significant here. And you were on this earlier. And, you know, get some of your ideals on the current politics. Let's listen to this here. Let's talk about this. This is Martin Sandler talking about Israel involvement in the JFKs. And JFK, in my opinion, there was a lot of people that knew what was going to go down, and the Israelis were definitely one of them.
There's a very surprising series of letters between Kennedy and David Ben-Gurion, not only the prime minister, premier of Israel, but the founder of Israel, in which they're very angry letters, in which Kennedy is saying to Ben-Gurion, I'm killing myself trying to get a nuclear test ban treaty. I've even got De Gaulle on board, and that's impossible. And you keep testing in Dimona. You've got to stop. And Ben-Gurion, thank you, in so many words says, it's easy for you to say sitting in Hyannisport. I'm sitting with the Arabs all around me, and you want me to give up nuclear testing. And Kennedy threatens him. And he threatens him in such a way that Ben-Gurion resigns. And I will tell you that I found articles, not in any crackpot publications, but in very sophisticated publications saying, forget Lyndon Johnson, forget the CIA, forget Fidel Castro. The Mossad killed Kennedy because they were so upset over what he did to Ben-Gurion. So, you know, we got a few little bombshells we throw in there, not proven.
Yes, I hear you.
I was waiting for someone to bring that out with the JFK files, because that has long been the rumor that a coalition of mobsters, if you will, wanted JFK dead. That's kind of a fact. And the Israelis are never mentioned. This is the first time I've seen anyone like mainstream historian Martin Sandler mention it. This is at Hyannisport, Massachusetts, JFK Library. This is pretty controversial because it's Jews, of course.
Well, I shared this video too earlier.
Right.
It is interesting how that didn't get brought into the broader discussion, especially when I was really starting to look into that event, like when I was getting into, like 20 years ago. It was not very much at the forefront. It's really in the last few years, like my song, you don't have to play, but the one that got one of the ones that got me in big trouble is Swindler's Grift. The lyrics are, there is a land across the sea beyond the shore of Galilee. They tend to bend their history. Just ask the USS Liberty. They gunned them down while LBJ said, hey, I'd rather not end up like JFK. I swear I'll never take their nukes away. So this idea of, the nuclear weapons aspect of it, it initially seemed a little bit too fanciful for me, but I think you hit the right word. It was a coalescence of interests. Yeah, there's my favorite. This is my heartthrob.
You tweeted this out. I have not seen her in years never really heard anyone mention it. This is Ruth Payne. She's a CIA agent who was Lee Harvey Oswald's handler for the Kennedy assassination.
Click the original tweet. Click the original tweet that I'm retweeting. I'm retweeting that, right? Look at that. 5 million views.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Impressive.
In fact, I basically broke Grok permanently with this picture, right?
CIA agent, where'd you get this picture at? Who was Lee Harvey Oswald's handler for the Kennedy assassination? Lee was a patsy. Ruth is still alive. One of the main reasons the JFK files are still sealed. This is a supremely evil human being. She does have that evil look to her.
Yeah, so this picture was taken by a documentary filmmaker who I follow on X, and he made a movie about her called The Assassination and Mrs. Payne. There it is. It got copyright claimed, but you can watch it on Rumble. And it basically shows that she's CIA, her sister's CIA, and her dad was CIA, and he was actually USAID, speaking of, because that's all in the news, right?
Oh,
no, and they were friends with Dulles. They went and partied on his private island. They owned property next. They were like neighbors. So she just basically she's lived with Marina Oswald and inserted herself into their lives and got Lee the job at the Texas School Book Depository. So she was just intimate in all of this. She did more testimony to the Warren Commission, which was, of course, all fake, right? She gave more testimony than anybody else. But they, you know, she's basically maintained her innocence so over the years, but it's pretty clear that she's was involved in the whole thing. And I long suspected that she would, her name would be coming up in these files that are literally released 20 minutes ago. So when we're done with this, I'll probably go do a little control search for Ruth Payne's name. I doubt it's going to be anything in there. They wiped her stuff clean a long time ago. So a lot of this does seem like posturing. People, we've identified, like you said, this coalescence of interests, the mob, the Castro folk, the CIA, and then when you have the Mossad equation, and even Zapruder, the guy who filmed it, right? He was like a 33-degree Freemason, Jewish Freemason, and was basically there to document the thing, right? And they took his footage, right? So this, it reminds you of the 9/11, right?
Yeah. They're saying in the chat, someone's saying she's a hatchet-faced Jewish lady, but I don't. She has a very Anglo-WASP name.
No, she was a Quaker.
Oh, she's Quakers are even worse than Jews. Sometimes they're basically white WASP, they're a big problem. Quakers are
I've been playing these old songs so much that what you just said almost could be a song title. The Quakers are even worse.
Whitaker used to tell me stories that were unbelievable. The guy that put me in business, about how many times the Quakers effed over whites in this country. It's like they wouldn't fight. They have all these hang-ups. They do all this stupid shit. Oh man.
So it's not talked about enough. If you try to grok that image,
yeah, that's a real name apparently. She's a WASP Quaker type. You can tell.
This picture breaks grok. So go impress grok. Well, that's another important part of the story is Judith Vary Baker. Because it was all vaccine, right? There's a whole rabbit hole with the polio vaccine.
Oh God.
Which that's connected to the JFK thing. It's crazy. No, but click grok on this image. Watch.
Wait a minute. Grok over here?
Yeah, it should be on the top right, right?
Something broke. Talk to me later.
Yes. Yes. And even if you go back to the post I shared today, even retweets of this tweet will break grok. Try to grok this.
Hold on a minute. Hold on here. I can't. Well, hold on. Something broke. Talk to me later.
It breaks grok. You can ask grok about Ruth Payne, and it'll talk to you about her. But this image and my thread ended up breaking grok, and it's like permanent. And I've tried to repost it and take screenshots of it, and it always breaks grok. So there's something they're programming it to not talk about.
She's bad news. She's bad news. She's got the. She's got the deets on the Jews, probably.
She's got the deets.
Plus, she's
sure.
How old is she?
She's 93, I think.
And they're not releasing it for her safety.
Partly, no. Well, because she's, you know, they don't want to compromise their sources. That's what they keep saying. And people are like, "Who's still alive from the Kennedy assassination?" Well, there's still people. That are still
How
alive.
Old is this photo? Is this photo like 20 years old, 30 years old?
Up 2 years, 2 or 3 years.
Oh, is that it? She still looks like that at 93. Okay.
Yeah. Maybe she looks a little older now, probably. Maybe this could. I could be wrong. This
She's
could be
from
in the
a
20s.
Time period when this. If she worked for the CIA, she was greasy as hell. No women worked for the CIA at that time.
Well, like I
greasy.
Said, her father and her sister were already in proven to be working for them. So.
Yeah, that sounds like a greasy, greasy family. What father would want your daughters working something like the CIA in the 60s? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, he was USAID, which is crazy. You know, all this stuff is coming around full circle. And here just today, what we had a judge say, you have to put back USAID. That literally just happened. It's crazy. I don't know. It's interesting how these agencies have just taken over, and they started working together, and like I said, this coalescence of interests, and they all seem to around the Kennedy time, they all were like, yeah, let's like work together in this one thing.
Yeah, I don't know, but Very interesting conversation. Swindler's List. Is that on your particular...
The Swindler's Grift one?
Whatever it is it on your particular... is it on
Rumble? It's on... It's banned in Europe on X, so you can't watch it in Europe.
Okay, hold on here. Swindler's... Is it up here? Is it on Rumble?
It should be on Rumble, yep. Swindler's Grift, yep. I have a newer one that has images in it. So it's the one when I have Adrian Brody's face. Look at how many people have reposted my song.
That's crazy. Swindler's Grift. All right, we're going to play this and let you go.
Is this the one that has – I can't see it because it's corrupt. Yeah, okay, the one with Adrian Brody.
It's the one. Fiddler's Grift V2 5 months ago. Let me give it a thumbs up, even before I hear it. But let's play it. Then I'm going to let you go. Let you have the last word.
There is a land across the sea, beyond the shores of Galilee. They tend to bend their history. Just ask the USS Liberty. They gunned him down while LBJ said, hey, I'd rather not end up like JFK. I swear I'll never take their nukes anyway. Wonder who's over you, it's who you can't defy. Hum a silly song or two, the clamor for your hide. In the great war, bow for pledge to yield the promised lands to the crimson shield. But first, more blood to flood the field.
Now, what I can envision is that, like, you know, you're going to have a bunch of anti-Semitism for, like, the lower classes, all the Wignat stuff. This is going to be, like, the type of stuff Tucker Carlson likes. This is going to be, like, the upper class. It's like where the upper class would go to Broadway and hear stuff in musicals and stuff like that. And then there was all these honky-tonk type places for the lower class. I can see this being, like, upper class anti-Semitism, like
I love it.
Acceptable upper class anti-Semitism, which is kind of funny.
Fields another war. We'll seal the deal with a boogeyman to scan the master plan. Two hopes, so their folks get the holy land. Though from 109 others, they've been banned. Wonder who's over you, it's who you can't defy. Hum a silly song or two, they'll kvetch at you for rhyme. Through deception they wage wars and wares. They stage plays like Levant affairs. The Samson options on, beware. You better cut off Samson's hair. The Philistines will bring them to their knees by billing you for bills we print like leaves. Our funny money tends to grow on trees. Wonder who's over you, it's who you can't defy. I'm a silly song or two, they'll act like they all die. When the Soviets overtook gas champs, they exaggerated murder camps with gory stories of soaps and lamps. 6 million was their magic.
the news had used the 6 million ruse for years.
Are you even going into the Holocaust? You're not sparing anyone in this one. You're not sparing any of the grift. It's all in.
I told you it's banned in Europe.
Song. It's complete. It's a complete.
A spooky number needs to stoke the fears, despite it being clearly just for feels. Wonder who rules over you, it's who you can't defy. On a silly song or two, they'll strike you while they cry. When Geeling's father's water date implicated heads of state, they watch with software her sisters made, that Monica was clearly bait. They knew who blew 9/11. You want proof? Just ask the dancing students on the roof. That direct energy made them go poof. Wonder who's over you, it's who you can't defy. Sing a silly song or two, have an alibi. The olden Babylonian shtick continue with the Khazar's grift. They defend their rights to a divine gift to rule mankind with an iron fist. And in case a slave will brave them and complain, they'll cancel you and hide behind their race. Despite it's our rights they're trying to song or two, shine light on the tribe while their lobbyists connive. Oh, that Iron Dome's a lie. This world is so contrived, might as well just smile. Just smile.
This is the Foundry. It's very interesting. Fascinating stuff. How did you get the name Foundry, by the way? Where's that from?
It comes from, I made it up like in high school. It's just a character that I is my character, that my satire character. Okay. It comes from the word to founder, which means to sink, like when a boat sinks, usually when it hit rocks, it's called foundering. And I took out the E, so it just looks like foundering.
Gotcha.
Doesn't really mean that much. It is what it is. But anyway, hey, appreciate you playing all those tunes.
I appreciate you coming on. Yeah, I don't know anyone out there doing remakes of old ragtime classics, or anyone with the talent that you have, at least doing it. Maybe you'll start a new trend. It is. It was good to meet you on iHypocrite Show. And, I do appreciate it.
We got to be talking as the JFK files get released, and it already looks like it's a big nothing burger.
Yeah,
and they've absolved themselves of all guilt, and it looks like the Warren Commission was right all along. Shucks, guys.
Yeah, I do. I do appreciate the support, guys. Appreciate Rebel Science. And it was made up. This guy is great. I'll check out more of his stuff. Keep up the good work. Garen, thank you, White Rab Radio and Foundering. Thank you very much, Garen. I appreciate the support, guys. I'll be back tomorrow at 5:30 p.m. You will find his music at always at the link in the description. If you go there, you'll find all his links on X. They're all right there. There's Gum Road, there's Rumble, there's Odyssey. Just look up FOUNDRING. Always the links are in the description. I do appreciate it, though. And when can they, are you coming out with anything this week, next week? I see you just have something out for.
I might be releasing a compilation album of all of my satire songs that I've done in the last couple years within the next couple weeks or so. So keep an eye out for that.
All right. I do appreciate it, sir. And thank you for taking the time to talk with us. I look forward to listening to music and see more of it to come. I see it. You know, there's people that they just won't watch certain shows. You know what I mean? They like find it like, okay, this is like, that's like unacceptable anti-Semitism. But yet if you disarm it through like that Swindler's grift, if you disarm it, you can come at them with Holocaust denial or whatever you want to do. And they'll be like, okay, well, this is art. You know, that's what I remember from anti-racist Hitler. They're like, okay, that's a different type of anti-Semitism. This is okay. It's hard-hitting satire, but it's okay. It's like, you know, the upper classes.
You found that formula a long time ago, and I'm kind of like figuring it out myself, or that how we can do that. We use their tools against them. And here, you know, with that Oy Vey, Shut It Down song, I'm like, Jews fake space. And they then, but then I'll say something, you know, a little more whatever. And then I can say, oh, this is clearly satire. Do you really think that I believe that Jewish people fake space? And they kind of get all sheepish and they're like, and they like, they look around, they can't really, they don't have a response for that. Because again, these tools are very powerful. And then they'd say, oh, you're just hiding your real bigotry behind satire. I'm like, what? So, I mean, whatever. Are you God? Like, how do you can't get in my head to know what I personally believe. And again, that's why they want to take these ideas, these musical, this satire, whatever you want to put it, the comedy, and they want to control it because they're such a good way, like you said, to disarm people. They are more receptive to conspiracy theories if there is a rhythm to it, if there's something catchy and fun and appealing about it. And that's what I'm trying to do. It's more just make people think for themselves. I sing about all sorts of dumb shit that I don't believe, but that's kind of the fun of it. The fun of this foundering persona that I've made is just to get people to just think about things in a different way. And music is a really good vehicle for that. So anyway, I really appreciate you, man. And appreciate your work and bringing me on. So.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. Cheers.
Cheers.
I'll be back tomorrow, guys, 5:30 p.m. When we do these interviews, I have to schedule them when the person can come on. I mean, Emily Yukas couldn't come on a Monday. She has to come on a Friday. So we got to schedule them when we could schedule them.
I did a live show with Emily, and I would love to tour with her. Once things like get like cool, we already have plans. We're talking like I play some piano and she'll do her songs. Like we're going to reinvent culture. We're going to take it back and show that this kind of thing is what's fun and cool. So I love Emily. She's great.
Cheers. I appreciate you taking the time to come
on,
man. And cheer. And I'll be in touch. Thanks.
Great. Take care.
And thanks you guys.